tough one.
Will the House please come to order? In accord with the uniform rules, I'll now turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, Senator Catula.
The joint session, please come to order. Senator A.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call for the Senate be waived and all members be shown as present.
Objection. So ordered. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent the roll call of the House be waived and all members be shown as present.
Without objection. So ordered. This time, it's my pleasure to request Representative Bettesworth and Senator Ferguson to escort the governor into the chambers. We'll stand at ease. Pleasure to introduce, we used to call a previous governor, our Bill, introduce again our Bill, Governor Bill Sheffield. Welcome today.
Thank you very much. President Catula, Speaker Hayes, ladies and gentlemen of the House and Senate, and all the people of Alaska. 1984 is a special year for us. It's a year of celebration for all we've accomplished as the 49th state. It's also a time for rededicating ourselves to building on those accomplishments for ourselves and future generations of Alaskans. During the past week, I had the opportunity to help start the celebration of Alaska statehood by attending the silver anniversary ceremonies in Fairbanks. The occasion brought together many of the men and women who were instrumental and achieving statehood for Alaska. Last week's ceremonies also brought back a lot of memories. For example, I remember moving to Alaska in territorial days as a young man. Television was just starting in Alaska, and I was a TV repairman. That was 1953. Today, modern communications, financed in part by state dollars, bring all Alaskans together. And the fellow who started out as a TV repairman can stand here and be seen and heard in nearly every home across our state. Other developments in our past 25 years are just as remarkable. Natural disasters in the form of a great earthquake in 1964 and a major flood in 1967 nearly destroyed our largest cities. Today, the communities of Anchorage and Fairbanks have rebuilt themselves and share a future tied together by a new electrical transmission line and perhaps soon a state-owned railroad. The past 25 years also evoke memories of many battles fought in the area of economic development, environmental protection, and social progress. The great debate over the Trans-Alaska Pipeline may seem like a distant memory to some Alaskans, but the laws that were forged at the state and national level as a result of the pipeline debate continue to shape our lives and times today. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act brought a measure of social and economic justice to the last frontier. If any segment of our society had been overlooked in 1959, it was our Native communities. And passage of the Claims Act by Congress helped right this injustice. This might not have been possible as soon as it was without other events occurring, namely the discovery of oil at Prudhoe Bay and the birth of America's environmental movement. Today, the Claims Law and the Alaska Lands Act that followed 9 years later combined to set the pattern for ownership of Alaska and give us the best hope for retaining our wealth at home in private hands. The Pipeline Act itself ushered in the largest private construction project ever seen in North America and focused the nation's eyes on our state. We responded by helping the pipeline go forward, but to the extent possible on our terms, under our laws. That was another battle of the 70s. Today, we reap the benefits of those laws, from needed public works projects to low levels of personal taxation, from a $2 billion state operating budget to a $5 billion Alaska Permanent Fund. Clearly, the first 25 years of statehood have been good to us. We suffered through natural disasters and recovered. We faced up to the shortcomings of the Statehood Act and helped our people prosper. We learned how to innovate in times of need and save in times of plenty. Most importantly, perhaps, we somehow managed to hold ourselves together in spite of the forces that would tear us apart. From Ketchikan to Barrow, we remained Alaskans. We are united, if not always unanimous. Sometimes we are united only by our differences, but what we're striving for is always the same ideal, a better state and a stronger nation in a more humane world. As we celebrate these achievements of statehood in 1984, however, the questions remain with us. What about the future? Will the next 25 years be as good? We may not know the answer to that question until 9 years into the next century, but tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and in the weeks ahead, it's critical that the second session of the 13th Alaska Legislature start us on the right path to a truly golden anniversary 25 years hence. I'm positive we can start on this path together. To be sure, we have no choice but to act together, because otherwise we won't get anything done. As we all know all too well, the 1983 session did not set high standards for working together. In that regard, both the executive and the legislative branches have much room to improve. But contrary to popular opinion, we do have accomplishments from 1983 to build on, because we did help the people in many ways. For example, last year we worked together to petition the federal government for Alaska to have 2 instead of 4 time zones. In October, it happened, and I'm glad to see most Alaskans are welcoming the change, one that makes it easier for us to communicate with each other in government, business, and our personal lives. And another step we took together in 1983 provided the first state funds ever to fight hepatitis B in our villages. More funds will be needed in that effort this year. We also worked together in 1983 to help the Pribilof Islands toward economic independence, for the creation of 12 marine parks, for tougher laws against drunk driving, for a new homestead program on state land, and for continuing our commitment to the Alaska Permanent Fund. Most importantly, in 1983, we worked together to contain the cost of state services. The fiscal 84 operating budget increased just 2.2%, the smallest increase in 13 years. This, I believe, was a real achievement, and one we'll be hard-pressed to equal in fiscal 85. On Thursday, I'll have more to say on this topic when the executive budget for next year is presented for your consideration. In the meantime, I can't emphasize enough the need to exercise restraint and creativity in our spending decisions this year. Restraint is needed because our main source of revenue is being constrained by a glutted oil market. We also must continue to keep in mind that peak production at Prudhoe Bay will last just 4 more years. That potential for a revenue shock is a very large ingredient in every decision we'll make this year and the years ahead. At the same time, the demands of a growing state and changing times require we do the best with the revenue we have today. This means creative approaches to the major issues of the year, including state acquisition of the Alaska Railroad, formation of an energy program for Alaska, particularly as it relates to hydroelectric power, making a major effort to market the untapped gas reserve at Prudhoe Bay, for our senior citizens' continued defense of our state's longevity bonus program. For low-income Alaskans and the unemployed, a greater share of state resources. For the safety of all of our citizens, an expanded state jail system, and creation of a cabinet-level corrections agency. For our fishermen and our fish in Cook Inlet, a special management area for the most heavily utilized river in our state, the Kenai River. And for the future of all Alaskans, a continued commitment to building the Alaska Permanent Fund, plus an open and honest debate on formation of a fund for building major state projects. Let me discuss each of these issues in more detail. First, the Alaska Railroad. We have before us this year a major opportunity for local ownership and control of a key link in our transportation network. From Tidewater at Seward to the Great Interior, the Alaska Railroad is vital in moving passengers, freight, and raw goods across our state. Between now and next July, we have the option of buying the railroad from the federal government for a base price of $22.3 million. Other costs are associated with the purchase, but none of them is large enough to make the purchase price too high. Therefore, with the belief that this railroad should continue its vital role in our state, I will submit legislation authorizing the takeover and work with you in earnest on the best means for operating the railroad. During the past few months, the administration has been actively pursuing an agreement with several local power companies to finance a reliable source of electricity for five of our coastal communities. I'm happy to report tonight that we are close to reaching those agreements. In order for those agreements to become final, this legislature and the administration must act quickly on two fronts. First, I will submit legislation removing the Susitna Clause, a 1981 amendment to our laws that is making it impossible to arrange long-term financing for hydropower in our coastal communities. In fact, the amendment may prove a stumbling block to financing the Susitna project itself. If the Susitna Clause is repealed, as I propose, the administration will then proceed to arrange the best financing package available for completion of the hydro projects in Ketchikan, Wrangell, Valdez, and Kodiak. Without this financing package, we face two prospects: either draining our state treasury by $180 million this year to pay for construction of these dams, or shutting them down until adequate financing can be arranged. However, with long-term financing the state can obtain on today's markets, the opportunity is here for us to form a cooperative between the communities involved in these projects. This cooperative, or four-dam pool, can provide in turn the basis for helping to finance other hydro projects across the state and create the foundation of a comprehensive energy program for Alaska. In that connection, the Alaska Power Authority and the state administration have started discussions in the past several weeks towards formation of what might be called the Rail Belt Electrical Power Network. This involves utilities serving customers from Homer to Fairbanks. It's my hope this cooperative approach to hydropower can provide a forum for coordinating use of the Anchorage Fairbanks intertie, which will be completed in 1984. As well, I believe our discussions for these utilities will lead to a firm plan to market the huge amount of power that would be available from Susitna. During the budget presentation on Thursday, I'll have more to say on hydropower and the administration's plan for helping rural Alaskans cope with the high cost of heating. For tonight, however, no discussion of state energy policy would be complete without some mention of oil and gas. As you know, the state sponsored during October a delegation of Alaskans on a 10-day trip through Japan and South Korea. As the head of that delegation, I had the opportunity to discuss with Prime Minister Nakasone of Japan and President Chun of Korea the future of Alaska and their economic plans. Later, President Reagan also met with the leaders of these countries. The result in Tokyo was a joint policy statement on trade issues, that mentioned prominently the idea of exporting Alaska oil to Japan. In a matter of weeks, this question will be up for a debate on the floor of the U.S. Senate. This will require careful monitoring by the state if we are to succeed in opening the way to limited exports of Alaska oil to Japan. In the meantime, our Department of Natural Resources has completed negotiations on revised contracts for the sale of state royalty oil to two refineries on the Kenai Peninsula. These proposed contracts require a vote of the legislature to be final, and I believe they deserve your support. Since the issue of in-state refining of royalty oil was before you last year, I expect the House and Senate to be well-versed in the merits of these contracts. The basic premise of each proposed sale is to provide a steady source of crude oil for meeting in-state refining needs. This is the highest priority established by law for our royalty oil. If the legislature does not approve these contracts, then I hope you will consider changing the laws under which our royalty oil is governed. To do otherwise only complicates the job of state officials and confuses the industry. Another element in the oil and gas resource of Alaska is the undeveloped reserve at Prudhoe Bay. At an estimated 29 trillion cubic feet, this is one of the largest untapped gas reserves in the world. It is not now being marketed because no one has yet found a way to do so profitably. I don't know whether it's possible for us to find a way to get this gas to market, but this gas belongs to all Alaskans, and we all would benefit by its development. I have therefore determined to start a dialogue with the major oil producers at Prudhoe, the federal government, and with potential transporters and buyers to find out what is in the way of converting this gas reserve to a producing asset. I have spoken with the principal executives with the producing companies and will meet with each of them shortly. I also talked just today with Energy Secretary Don Hodel about both the oil export issue and the need to develop our North Slope gas. I believe he is sympathetic to Alaska's position on both issues, and we agreed to talk again after my meeting with the producers. In joint action with the producing companies and their appropriate federal agencies, Ben will attempt to identify those things which are keeping Prudhoe Bay's gas out of the market. I believe this opportunity has few equals in our state today. If the gas were to be exported to the Pacific Rim nations, for instance, it would provide more than 10 million tons a year of liquefied natural gas for more than 40 years. Clearly, we need to stimulate such an enterprise if we can. I think we can identify the impediments to developing the gas if the administration and legislature work with each other and with the other participants, and I'm hopeful we can move the project forward. As I said earlier, one of the half dozen major issues facing us this year is what to do with the Pioneer Longevity Bonus Program. More than 9,000 pioneers now receive $250 a month from the state in recognition of their contributions to Alaska. Although this program is now under a severe legal challenge, we're confident we can obtain a stay while we appeal the recent court ruling that held it unconstitutional. And while the legislature and administration should work on developing an alternate bonus plan, we remain optimistic that the current program can be saved. In 1984, the Longevity Bonus Program is but one item on a long list of basic human concerns that will demand our attention during this session. Rapid growth in our urban areas, for example, is putting heavier pressure on our schools. Even as we push for completion of the school foundation study in 1985, the school enrollment increase of 1984 means a higher commitment of state funds for quality education. The federal budget deficit, meanwhile, is causing a cutback in services to show who can least afford it, the poor. By federal standards, one in every five Alaskans is at or below the poverty level. This demands that we do all we can to help the needy among us obtain employment, good housing, and child care. Therefore, I'll be submitting for your approval a series of spending programs and changes to our laws to ensure the following: that job training and equal employment opportunity take on more meaning in our state, that lower-income Alaskans receive a larger share of housing loans issued by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and that daycare services are offered to more families at a lower cost. In concert with these initiatives, I intend to ask you for tougher enforcement powers in another area of our laws, the Child Support Enforcement Program. Currently, more than 8 of every 10 families that receive monthly AFDC checks from the state are eligible because a living parent is absent from the home. To reduce welfare payments and strengthen families, current state law fixes responsibility for supporting children where it belongs, on the parents. But despite increased enforcement efforts by the state, the percentage of support payments actually received by single-parent families is very low. The best numbers we have place total payments in arrears at more than $20 million. I believe we must stop this neglect by putting some real teeth in our child support enforcement program. And under legislation I'll present to you, this can be done in 1984. All states share this problem with child support enforcement. More states also are under pressure in another area, corrections. Last year, the legislature took a giant stride in helping to solve the problems of overcrowded and understaffed jails in Alaska. This year, another big step is needed. Just before Christmas, I announced the selection of Seward as the site for the state's first maximum security prison. Funds needed for a first-year lease and operation of this and other expanded correction programs will be included in Thursday's budget presentation. On another front, House Bill 103, creating the Department of Corrections, is presently in a conference committee. At the urging of every segment of our criminal justice system, and for the sake of employee morale, I urge early passage of this legislation. At your urging, last summer, my office and 4 state agencies conducted a joint survey of the problems affecting one of our most important rivers. Every summer, thousands of sport and commercial fishermen, plus many more campers and sightseers, flock to the Kenai River. The result is unprecedented pressure on the most valuable salmon-producing stream in Cook Inlet. We must act now to protect this resource. Therefore, I will be submitting legislation that designates a 92-mile section of the river from Kenai Lake to Cook Inlet as the Kenai River Special Management Area. This legislation will give the highest priority to the production and use of fish and wildlife along the river. A long-range comprehensive plan and local advisory committees are proposed as part of the special management area. And I encourage any other thoughts the legislature has on this critical issue. As we conserve Alaska's natural resources, like the Kenai River, the best use of our financial resources. Tonight, in the time remaining, I'd like to offer 2 steps we can take that may determine how we best use our money for many, many years to come. One major initiative uses a tool already at our disposal, the Alaska Permanent Fund. Created by voters in 1976, the Permanent Fund is founded on the sound premise that the oil wealth we enjoy today won't always be so plentiful. And through a constitutional dedication of royalty income, the Permanent Fund receives daily injections of cash that generates interest money for our use. Beyond those dedicated funds, the legislature has seen fit to appropriate extra money to the Permanent Fund out of other revenues. When I took office a year ago, we owed the Permanent Fund $700 million from those appropriations. Today, following 3 separate deposits in 1983, that debt has been cut to $400 million. I'm proud of that, but I don't believe we should stop there. Therefore, I will ask this legislature for an additional appropriation of approximately $400 million to be put into the permanent fund as revenues become available. I see this as a continuation of our commitment to the permanent fund and to Alaska's financial well-being in the 1990s and beyond. Another initiative I believe we should take this year for our financial security also calls for saving a large amount of our one-time oil revenue, but with a difference. Again, this initiative is founded on the principle that by 1990, our major source of state revenue will be declining, and so we must act now. We still have time to set aside available cash today for the future use, but that opportunity will likely be gone in the next few years. With the money we have today, we are currently funding many vital services across our state. We are investing additional millions in public improvements and loan programs, and we're using some of the interest generated by the permanent fund to pay annual dividends to our residents. Between the operating budget, the capital budget, the loans budget, and the permanent fund, we have a lot to do. But I believe we can do more and must do more. We must do more to help diversify Alaska's economy. We must do more to target our spending for the best results in the future. We have to do more than we're doing today, and it's crucial we do it in the most creative way possible. Today, our creativity in state spending is limited to a large extent by the pressures of the day. In one area especially, the capital budget, our spending patterns are driven by past poverty, current need, and unfortunately too often by regional jealousies. To overcome these problems, I propose the creation of a special fund for major capital projects. There are various ways to create the fund, and I will submit three options for consideration. Two of these options include either a constitutional amendment or a statutory authority to create a dedicated fund. The other option I can offer the legislature for financing major capital projects deals only with hydroelectric power. This would be through the existing special fund for power development and does not address other types of public works projects. No matter which course we choose, I believe it's time we have an open and honest discussion of our financial future. We owe no less to the people we serve and the future generations we all hope will prosper on the last frontier. On Thursday, as I said, I'll have more to say on our financial picture in the coming months. For tonight, however, and this State of the State address, let me offer a parting word of hope and optimism. We have made great progress in Alaska in our 25 years of statehood, and I can tell you tonight that the state of our state is good. During 1984, we have a tremendous opportunity to make Alaska even better by buying a railroad, consolidating our energy programs, and making a major effort to market our natural gas. And during 1984, we have a tremendous duty to help our state by helping our senior citizens, our unemployed, and our poor. In 1984, we have a tremendous opportunity to help our state by improving our jail system, protecting our natural resources, and conserving our financial wealth for future generations. We have before us both great opportunities and obligations in 1984. I'm hopeful and optimistic we can make the best of both this year. On behalf of my cabinet members who are here tonight and for all state employees across Alaska, I thank you and extend my best wishes to all Alaskans for a good year ahead. Thank you and good night.
I would like to take this opportunity to introduce a couple of people tonight before the end of the session. There may be others in need of introduction. One in the rear is Senator Bill Hensley, who has been a member of both the House and the Senate. We welcome you tonight, Bill. The other two are Commissioner Glenzer, who's back here, has taken over temporarily the Department of Transportation, Mr. John Shively, who is the new governor's chief of staff. We welcome you this evening. Senator Ray?
Mr. President, I move the joint session stand adjourned.
We are adjourned.